Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and that means it's time for Stuff You Should Know, the itchy, squeezy, skeezy, scratchy edition.
Not skeezy.
No.
That's not.
Itchy, scratchy, sneezy edition. That's what I meant.
There you go.
It's funny how you can mix words together and come up with other words you didn't mean to say.
Jerry's eyes are itching.
Yeah. Well, we should say, we were just talking about the pollen count here in Atlanta. That's pretty much all we ever talk about ever.
Sure.
When the camera's not on or the mics aren't recording.
That and Coca-Cola.
Really?
Oh, you know how everyone comes to Atlanta and they're like, oh, every street's named Peachtree.
Oh,
let's
yeah.
go drink a Coke. Because those are the only two things we've ever had.
Exactly.
All right, sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. So you want to talk about pollen some more?
Yeah, it's low right now in Atlanta.
39. That's moderate.
Yeah, well, low for us.
Right, but like according to the pollen scale, the scale that they use to count pollen and mm-hmm. then designate it somewhere along the pollen spectrum, 39 is considered moderate. Not even low, moderate. When it's really bad here in Georgia, mm-hmm. it gets to about 9,000.
Yeah, those are the few weeks that the streets run yellow with when it rains with yellow water.
Yeah.
Looks like pee.
Yep, your car's totally covered in it. You're covered in it. It's just everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah. But now we're about to tell everybody. We're basically going to turn everybody into a palynologist.
Yeah.
To an extent.
Should be a big fan after this.
An amateur palynologist.
I think about a third of all the plants and vegetables and fruits and vegetables we eat are, you know, here thanks to pollen. So if you like eating food,
yeah,
it doesn't come in a box. Thank you, pollen.
Is it just a third that pollinate, or a third that are just angiosperms or gymnosperms?
A third that pollinate.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's up with the other two thirds?
I don't know.
Well, you know, bananas, they're clones of one another.
There you go.
There's like, there's the one. There's like, I think 1,000 varieties of bananas. And thanks, by the way, to Damn Interesting for this information.
Uh-huh.
But there's like 1,000 varieties or species of bananas. But each one, like if you eat like a type of just one of those species of bananas,
yeah.
you're eating an exact clone of every other banana in that species. Because many thousands of years ago, humans just stumbled upon the banana, which uh-huh. is a hybrid of two basically inedible fruits that came together to form the delicious banana,
yeah.
but made them sterile. All banana plants are sterile. And the only way that they're allowed to propagate is by human hand.
They're delicious.
I did a Don't Be Dumb about that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you just did it again.
Yeah. You can check out Don't Be Dumbs on our website, stuffyoushouldknow.com.
Wow. All right.
Anyway, pollen.
Yes.
It's been around for a while. I know in our bee podcast we talked about how bees and pollen kind of emerged side by side 100 million years ago.
Some say co-evolved.
Right. But pollen actually goes further back than that.
Yeah.
In this article, it says about 375 million years ago is when the plants started getting clever and spreading their seed, literally, using pollen.
That's
different
right.
techniques. And I think the gymnosperms were first.
You think so?
I believe so.
Yeah. And the author of the article here points out that the reason why it evolved was so plants didn't have to be dumb and rely on water to carry their junk to fertilize other junk.
Right.
You know, they're like, how about wind? Or how about that bat? Or how
yeah.
about that beetle?
Yeah. Or how about that bird pooping it out?
That's right.
Yeah. I think pollen grains or plants spread their seed literally. Plant pollen is what amounts to plant sperm.
Yeah. It's like I always go to the kid science pages to research first off.
I mean, they're good.
They're
colorful.
Great. If we want to pollination very simply, you know, people reproduce, animals reproduce, and they need male and female parts. Plants and flowers are no different.
Right.
They need male parts to connect with the female parts to make an egg. And in this case, pollination is how it's done.
Right.
So it's basically how that sperm, the pollen, reaches that egg.
Which is the ovule.
Yeah.
Right. And once they get together, magic happens.
That's right. But let's talk about the way it looks, first of all.
Yeah, there's like
it's pretty cool.
There's a lot of different looks to pollen depending on the plant.
Yeah.
And all of these variations, it can be like a cone, literally a pine cone.
Yeah, and look up microscope pollen on Google Images, and you'll see all sorts of weird, colorful shapes and sizes.
Yeah, some look like blowfish.
Yeah.
Others look like Sputnik.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see the Sputnik.
Some have ribbed edges.
Yeah.
And all of these adaptations are mutations. I guess they became adaptations. Allow that pollen to kind of better ensure that it's going to be carried to where it needs to go.
Yeah. It has a purpose. It's not just like, hey, this one would look neat if it looked like a starfish.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it serves its
mix
purpose
it up
in the end.
Some have wings kind of what amount to basically wings because they're carried on the wind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like dandelion pollen, that's carried on the wind.
True. Well, dandelions self-pollinate, too. We'll get to that, though.
Yeah.
They're slippery little guys.
Yeah, they are. They're also high in phytonutrients as well.
Oh, yeah?
Dandelion greens are.
Oh, the stems?
No, the leaves.
Oh, the little leaves
under
the yellow part?
So here's a rule of thumb. There's a New York Times article that came out very recently about phytonutrients and how we basically bred them out of our food.
Uh-huh.
And the rule of thumb is the bitterer or more bitter the plant, the higher it is in phytonutrients. Phytonutrients have kind of a bitter astringent taste.
Yeah.
And we tend to not really like that. So we stopped eating those things over time and replaced them with sweet things that aren't necessarily good for us, like, you know, potatoes and other starches.
Yeah, well, bitter things can also kill you. That's probably one reason why.
Maybe so.
You know?
That's a pretty good point. But bitter stuff that you know won't kill you,
sure.
Dandelion leaves, go out and eat some right now.
Yeah. But back in the day, I bet people were like, that tastes bad and it killed Tuk Tuk, so let's just not eat it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. All right, so should we talk about pollination? Talk a little bit about pollen.
Yeah.
Now we need to talk about how plants make little baby plants.
Right.
And it's pretty simple. Like I said, the male part. And have you, it really helps to follow along if you go to a handy dandy little visual aid I found, because they really break down the male parts and the female parts. The female has the pistil, and that's PISTIL.
Mm-hmm.
And within that, you have the ovary, which are, you know, sits down low in the plant, and the style, which is a long, thin, appendage, I guess, that contains pollen tubes.
Right.
And then at the top you have your stigma, which is going to catch the pollen.
Yeah, and that's the female part, right?
That's the lady.
Okay. Don't be confused, because it is phallic in nature.
Yeah, true.
But it's still the female part.
And the male has the filament, which is a long stem, and then the anther at the top, which holds all the pollen.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the long and short of the parts.
And is that just angiosperms that you're describing, or is that all pollinating plants?
I think these are just the angiosperms.
Well, we should say quite explicitly that there's basically two ways that plants can pollinate. There's gymnosperms and angiosperms. And the big difference between the two is that gymnosperms, literally that means naked seed, which, by the way, gymnasium means place to be naked.
Gymnasium in German.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
So gymnosperms, naked seed, there's nothing protecting the seed once it's produced.
Yeah.
And a seed is just a fertilized ovum or ovule, right?
Yeah.
Angiosperms produce something to protect that seed, whether it's a shell, like a nut, or fruit, like an apple with the seeds inside.
Right.
Because an apple's just an enlarged ovule, ovary. And the seeds are the fertilized ovules.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you can also pollinate, cross-pollinate or self-pollinate.
Right.
Those are the other two differences.
So you were saying what, oh, dandelions self-pollinate?
Well, they can do both. But they do have a cool little feature. They basically grow up, you know, this is when they're still the little yellow flower.
Mm-hmm.
They have these little florets that grow up. If you look, well, you probably can't see. If you look really, really close though, they have these little florets that grow up. And as it grows, it carries, the pollen on its little stem. And then eventually gets to a point where it doesn't start growing up anymore, and it splits and then starts curling back on itself
mm-hmm.
to, you know.
No way.
It picks up its own pollen from its own style.
Huh.
And well, it's self-pollination. It's not gross or, like, perverted.
there's a lot of plants out there, though, that have mechanisms to prevent them from self-pollinating.
It can't be good or bad. That's what I couldn't figure out.
Well, the plants somewhere along the way figured out, like, hey, the wider the gene pool, the better off we are, because the more room there is for adaptation, mutations, and then adaptations, right?
Yeah, but in here the author said ideally it cross-pollinates, but I don't think that's the case always.
Well,
it's not ideal. It's just some do and some don't, right?
I mean, if you look at it like from just an animalistic or an organism viewpoint, right? Like
right.
with us. If you just get a bunch of Mennonites together and they just reproduce with one another, there's going to be defects that just are propagated throughout this little gene pool.
Yeah.
But if the Mennonites spread out into the, you know, larger country as a whole, those defects are going to, you know, I guess be kind of watered down by the size of the gene pool. I think it's the same thing with self-pollinating and cross-pollinating.
Yeah, because it's interesting, because things like peanuts are self-pollinators, and that's why they thrive. But corn has a mechanism to not allow itself to self-pollinate.
Right.
Like, I think the sperm is ready at a different time than the ovule is ready to accept it.
Right.
So it's a timing thing.
The thing is, peanuts would probably be able to talk if they didn't self-pollinate.
And they'd sound like Jimmy Carter.
So there's a lot of mechanisms that plants have to prevent themselves from self-pollinating. Some might have either just male plants and just female plants.
Yeah.
Some may be where the male part, if a plant has both male and female flowers, for example.
Dioecious?
Yes.
Yeah.
The male flower might come out before the female flower on the same plant.
Right.
So that they're not, the timing's off a little bit.
Right.
And then there's some that are just like, they'll signal a biochemical marker. If pollen from the same plant gets near the ovule, it'll just basically turn barren.
Right.
So it just is incapable of fertilizing itself.
Or like corn, where the timing's thrown off.
Yeah.
So they rely on cross-pollination.
Right.
Which is pretty cool.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's get explicit again here. Gymnosperms.
Yes.
Naked seed. How does this happen? Like, we'll use the example of a pine, a loblolly pine.
Yeah, a pine cone.
It's fun to say. But that's a conifer. Conifers are ancient. I believe they were the first pollinating plant.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
Nice.
So let's talk about it.
Well, the pine cones, they're little male pine cones, little female pine cones. You mm-hmm. might not realize that, but
yeah.
You've got quite a show going on in your backyard at certain times of the year.
Right. And basically, once you get the two together, you get a male pine cone and a female pine cone together.
Uh-huh.
The male pine cone fertilizes, well, the pollen comes in contact with an ovule.
Yeah.
And the pollen starts to go to town. It absorbs a bunch of water.
Yeah. Well, the female pine cone's a little sticky, too. That helps, by the way.
It does.
Helps collect the pollen.
Right. So the female, or the pollen, the male part of the pine cone,
mm-hmm.
germinates, and it starts growing what's called a pollen tube.
Yeah.
Which basically allows this pollen to directly fertilize the ovule.
Yeah.
Once that happens, the ovule basically becomes a seed,
mm-hmm.
and the seed is released from the pine cone. They go everywhere.
Yeah.
And then they're eaten by birds and pooped out elsewhere or carried along in the... They're trampled by a rhinoceros.
Sure.
Who knows what just got loose from the zoo.
Yeah.
But then that seed is carried along. But it's not protected by anything. It's just a seed.
Right.
And hence a naked seed, hence gymnosperms.
Right.
So angiosperms, they have kind of like a similar process, whereas there's a pollen tube that's grown, and the male pollen has to come in contact with the female pollen and all that.
Yeah, and we're talking about flowers in most cases here.
With angiosperms,
yeah.
They're the only ones that flower and produce fruit.
Yeah, so when you think about your garden with the honeybee and all, that's
angiosperm. Right. So that's a non-naked seed, and that's that's where the fruit comes in, or the shell comes in. There's angiosperms have developed a mechanism to protect the seed to better ensure its survival. And if you think about it, to entice the things that transport these seeds to go ahead and do their thing.
Yeah, there's like every flower has some sort of cool shape or scent or color or something that matches with some little insect or bird or bat that's going to be enticed, like the bumblebee and the foxglove. They go mm-hmm. hand in hand because mm-hmm. it fits up there just perfect.
Yeah.
And it has a little colorful landing strip on the bottom petal to guide the bumblebee in.
Yeah.
And it's just like nature's, it's just like harmonious, I
right.
guess.
There's that one orchid that I believe Darwin predicted the existence of a type of hummingbird that had a very long curled beak.
Oh, right.
That had co-evolved with it, and he was absolutely correct.
So cool.
Remember, it's in that movie Adaptation.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
And then
you can learn a lot from that movie.
Yeah, it's
if
a
you
great
pay attention.
Yeah, anything that what's his name, Charlie Kaufman writes.
Yeah,
well researched.
Agreed.
The fruit is another thing too. Animals love to eat fruit.
Yeah,
the fruit is basically once a piece of fruit drops to the ground, that means those seeds are ready to go. They're ready to become seedlings. But first, they need a fox to eat the apple, carry it in its stomach.
Right.
Over, you know, several meters or miles or whatever, and then poop it out, and then you have seeds that are basically just planted.
That's amazing.
They take purchase, and a new tree begins.
Where a seed, her insides were a rocky place where a seed could find no purchase.
You're right.
So pollen grains are actually created, I guess we should step back a second and talk about meiosis.
Mm-hmm.
That's the cells are dividing and growing. Eventually, you get a little pollen. It looks like a little dust speck to our eyeball, but it contains the sperm. It's not actually the sperm.
Right.
It contains the sperm therein.
Yeah.
And the pollen is in pollen sacs at the end of the stamen, which we talked about, and that little two-lobed anther.
Yeah.
And
like
then
Gunther.
Eventually it'll find its way to the stigma and travel down to the ovary. And in the case of angiosperms, there are two sperm that are used. I don't think we said in the case of gymnosperms,
right.
It's only one of the sperm is used, right?
Yeah, in a pollen sac, there's two sperm, but you just need one for the gymnosperm. For the angiosperm, you need two.
Yeah, because one is actually fertilizing the egg, and the other is developing into endosperm together alongside in what will eventually be the seed. And if you think that sounds gross, like the gymnosperm, sperm, I'm sorry, the endosperm is like a protein, basically.
Right.
To keep it all alive.
Yeah, that keeps the seedling happy and healthy.
So when you're eating corn, you're actually eating the endosperm. Each corn kernel is actually, you know, it's like that starchy endosperm.
Right.
Delicious.
Which the seed loves to eat itself.
And that's true.
So we talked about bees. We talked about birds, foxes. Mentioned poop a couple of times.
Fox gloves.
Yeah. And you were saying that, like, basically every flowering plant especially has some sort of mechanism to attract at least one kind of bug or animal that's been proven to help pollinate, transport this pollen.
Yeah.
And some of them, I mean, for the most part, we enjoy them. Like, you like the scent of, you know, a good flower, right?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. But you might not like the devil's tongue.
Yeah.
Which is a Sumatran plant that apparently reeks so badly. It smells like a decomposing flesh, basically.
Yeah.
Basically.
Did you see this thing?
I've seen it before, yes.
It's really remarkable.
Yeah.
It's like 2 feet tall.
And it basically flowers or blooms like once every like 10 years or 20 years or 200,
really.
Something like that, right?
I'm not sure.
If it's the same one I'm thinking of, then
but
yeah.
It's stinky.
Right. And the reason why it's stinky is because it pollinates with the help of a type of carrion beetle that's attracted to decomposing flesh.
Yeah.
So the plant attracts this beetle that likes to eat decomposing flesh by putting out the smell of decomposing flesh.
That's so gross.
Yeah, but it's pretty spectacular.
It is.
You know?
Yeah, and the philodendron, something you might have in your house, it actually does the same thing, but it doesn't stink always. There's actual a chemical reaction that takes place and heats it up to emit this odor that the beetle is attracted to.
Right.
Which sounds pretty gross, too.
Yeah.
But it all works, and I would Google that, Sumatran devil's tongue. It's pretty cool looking. Like, the flower itself is 2 feet. It's not like, oh, what a long stem.
Right.
It's just this huge flower. It's amazing.
Right. And then you're also saying, like, was it foxglove that provided a landing strip for bumblebees?
Yeah.
So flowers in general typically have certain types of, like, their color will be based on the kind of creature that that helps pollinate it, whether
right.
It's diurnal, meaning it's awake during the day, or nocturnal, meaning it's awake at night, right?
Right. I guess that's in case of, like, bats and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then our old friend nectar is a big lure, and basically nectar is around, right, just because it tastes delicious and is enticing
from what
to
I
the
understand,
pollinators?
Yeah, it's basically like a little enticement, like you said, for, like, a bee or something, or a bird.
Yeah.
Come get it. Because it's placed by the stamen.
That's right. Or the way that the anthers are situated, just the way they're placed in the flower.
Mm-hmm.
If it gave it an advantage to bump up against that bee, then it's going to be successful in the long run.
Yeah.
And live out as a species.
That is nice stuff.
That is pretty good.
So, Chuck, we've reached a point where, ever since we started selectively breeding plants, domesticating crops.
Like, hey, that's pretty.
Right. Or, hey, I like this banana.
Yeah. Or that's hardy and it grows in my awful hot area that I live in.
Exactly.
Many reasons to do so.
Right. We wanted to keep plants. We wanted to keep the bad stuff out, keep the good ones we wanted in.
Yeah.
But it never became more crucial, until we started genetically modifying crops.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, not only are the corporations saying, like, hey man, you can't cross-pollinate with our stuff or else that's patent infringement.
Yeah.
And a nearby farmer says, I'm not using your seeds. It's the bees. You can't blame me.
Right.
And the farmers who don't want GMO stuff in their crops say, hey, man, you need to keep your crops over there.
Yeah.
Because I don't want your GMO crud in here.
I have an organic farm.
Exactly.
And your junk is blowing by the wind. It's a touchy subject. We should do that as a whole, GMOs.
I agree. The idea of, like, patenting genes in general and let alone, like, crops it's really interesting. But there's been some pretty clever, simple, ways of getting around this problem that's posed by pollination of GMO crops with non-GMO crops.
Yeah, well, distance is obviously one thing.
Yeah, like, it's pretty simple.
Don't put my farm near your farm.
Yeah.
But they have to do all kinds of studies to see how the wind reacts and how far does that bee fly.
Yeah, and they found in certain parts of Africa, bees will go about 4 miles, 3 kilometers.
Yeah.
That's their range for food. That's a lot.
Yeah.
But I mean, just using that kind of thinking thought process, though, like, okay, well, this, you know, this guy's growing this over here, so I can't grow this here.
Right.
That will prevent that kind of pollination, though.
Yeah. Another thing they can do is, sort of like with the corn, they can time their crop rotation to time out, so where they're flowering at different times and not interfering with one another.
Right.
But, it's a touchy subject. Like, from what I understand, there's a lot more going on than, you know, is preferred by, like, the organic farmers of the world.
Sure.
And isn't the GMOs, they can then say that you're infringing?
Yeah.
Just because they cross-pollinated to their crop?
Right. Even though you didn't buy their seeds,
right,
or even want their seeds.
Interesting.
If a bee carries their seeds, their crops pollen over to your crops, and you start to develop plants that have that GMO
traits.
Characteristics uh-huh. That's patented, according to the corporations, you're infringing on their patent.
It's very tricky ground there, isn't it?
I don't think it's tricky ground. If you ask me, you should not be allowed to have a patent on any living organism.
Oh, well, yeah. You know what I mean, though.
That's my opinion.
It gets tricky in courts and in studies and in corporations. And
the
like
courts,
that.
Though, tend to side on the corporation's side, typically.
Yeah.
Let's do that one, though, soon.
GMOs?
Yeah.
All right.
So that's it for pollen. If you're interested in how pollen causes allergies, then you should listen to our How Allergies Work episode. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to recommend that. Nice work.
Thanks, man. So if you want to learn more about pollen in the meantime, you can type that word in the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And since I said search bar, it's time, of course, for a message break. Stuff you should know.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, how about some listener mail?
Yeah, we have a correction. Been blowing up lately.
Oh man, I'm sorry. You know what's crazy is that's the second time I've done that in a podcast.
On that same same thing?
I don't remember what the other podcast was, but I've mentioned it before and we've gotten tons of corrections about it. And all I didn't learn my lesson.
Well, this guy was really nice about it, so I'm going to read his.
Okay.
And it's an important correction because anytime you're talking about drugs.
Right.
So to recap, in the PTSD podcast, mm-hmm. we got the two drugs, beta blocker called propanolol, which helps with PTSD, confused mm-hmm. with propofol, which is what killed Michael Jackson. Right. And so this is from Chris. He's a big fan. He's listened to every episode on his commute in Southern California, which we know stinks. So he said what we just said about the getting the drugs confused. He said, I can see how you guys can mix it up because the names are very similar, but they're significantly different, obviously. Propanolol is relatively mild and commonly prescribed and very little potential for overdose, while propofol is a very powerful drug with extremely high potential for overdose and rarely administered outside of strictly monitored medical settings. It is actually a hypnotic agent that must be administered intravenously, because we talked about Michael Jackson's drip.
Right.
And is often used in conjunction with general anesthetics, like most general anesthetics. Its steep dose response curve significantly increases the risk of overdose, where the effective dose is only slightly below a lethal dose. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, like, when you're on that, like, you're right along the border.
Yeah. Well, he says Michael Jackson's case is extremely rare, so he was essentially exposing himself to risks similar to those associated with general anesthetics used during surgery, with a high potential for overdose and death on a daily basis for relatively trivial purposes, which were, in this case, his insomnia.
Yeah, but from what I understand, he had, like, years-long insomnia. Like, this guy was not sleeping at all. Like,
well,
they would give him everything first, and then they'd try that last resort. And, like, sometimes it still wouldn't work.
Really?
Yeah, he was really in bad shape at the end.
Well, he probably had a resistance to certain things like that. So Chris goes on to say, I'm not certain about the exact amount of risk posed by propofol administration, but I believe the risk of death is something on the order of tenths of a percent, meaning he would have died, according to the statistical model, within a couple of years of daily use, like pretty much guaranteed.
Right.
Frankly, he would have been better off using heroin that whole time in spite of his ironically strict yet poorly informed anti-drug stance. So that's from Chris.
Thanks, Chris. That was a genuinely awesome email.
Yeah, it was good.
And I'm sorry, everybody, for getting so wrong.
Well, I mean, the names are just confusing.
Yeah, but I mean, one's like a blood pressure medicine, the other one's like pretty much a general anesthetic.
I know, but what gets me is that half of the emails were like, well, yeah, they just sound alike, so you goofed it. And half of them were like, those drugs couldn't be any more different. Right. Like, you really thought that, you know, it's like a verbal typo.
Right. Thank you, Chuck.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me off.
So anyway.
If you have a correction for us, we really do like to get those. We like to know what we're talking about. Sometimes we get things wrong. Sometimes I get things wrong. But we do want to be corrected.
It happens.
In the nicest way possible. Because that's usually who gets their letter read, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. you can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com. And you can join us at our home on the web, the greatest website in the history of humanity, StuffYouShouldKnow, all one word, .com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
With over 100,000 titles to choose from, Audible.com is a leading provider of downloadable digital audiobooks and spoken word entertainment. Go to audiblepodcast.com/knowstuff, KNOWSTUFF, to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.